Well, it's 2026 and your church website remains the first impression that you will have on most visitors. But here's a question I have for you. Is your church website actually scaring some visitors away? Well, let's talk about it and maybe some of the things you can do to make your website more effective this year. Let's do this. You're listening to the Reach Right podcast, the show dedicated to helping your church reach more people and grow. Well, hey guys, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Ian.
And today we're talking about why your church website still feels outdated in 2026. I think it should be a good conversation that Ian, you and I have, we know something about this. You and I have been helping churches with their websites since back when you were in like your early 30s.
Jeez.
No, 20s.
No.
You were in your 20s. Yes, it's true.
You were
28.
28 when I started. Yeah, you're right. 28 when I started.
My
helping,
goodness.
I know. And now here I am at the ripe old age of 47. But you know what that means? Means I and you, Thomas, who are not far behind me, have a lot of experience with websites and have seen their evolution over the last more than a decade. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was thinking back as we were preparing for this, like, most of these rules are newer, but like even some of these we would have coached churches towards even way back then, back in 2007, 2006 when you started doing it.
Yeah.
Like, so websites have definitely changed, but I think some of these rules are just completely timeless. But if we just want to give you kind of a starter course here for 2026 when we're filming this of what you need to be doing right now and do a quick audit of your website. So I would recommend that if you're watching this on a computer or even on your phone, pull up your website somewhere else too and take a look at it as we're talking about this. And I think it'll be probably the most helpful thing you can do to give yourself kind of a 20-minute audit here as we go through this episode. So should be a good conversation today.
Yeah, and I want to say this too, you know, again, talking about our experience with it, seeing how websites have served churches, how they've changed as far as evolved the technology, the trends, all of that for so long. It's just crazy to me how many churches are still getting it wrong. And we get it. Mm-hmm. Every church, you know, means well. And they, I think most churches now know they still need a website. But even that is something, because with social media emerging and now we have apps and we have AI and we have all these different things. I think because of all of the different, you know, all of the different online avenues, if we could say it that way, a lot of churches have abandoned their websites, or they've just minimized the importance of them. And the fact is that even with all of this other stuff in the mix, 80 some odd percent of people will end up on a church's website before they physically come. Yeah. And when people do an online search, you know, the search engines, however they search, it's still going to be sending traffic to the website, pretty much first and foremost. So, yeah, I think it's good to preface, you know, before we dig in, saying that they are still very important.
Yeah, I think that's a mistake that a lot of people make, is that I get it. Like, you should be focusing on your Instagram presence and that kind of stuff, because that's probably a better discovery tool by itself than just your website. Like, so here's the fundamental thing with websites, is that just building a website doesn't get people onto that website. So if your problem is people discovering your church, just having a website won't ever fix that. Like, as nice as it might be, like, that doesn't solve that problem. There's several ways to be discovered. You know, some of them, like, you know, using the Google grant and getting $10,000 a month of free ads or local SEO, or, you know, like you're talking about, being found on Instagram or TikTok or other platforms like that. All of those good, but none of them actually, like they're not the place that people go. Like, they may find your Instagram page, but like your Instagram page will never get ranked when people search for people near me or churches near me. So
churches near me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Churches
you have to
in
be
your city.
Aware of those kinds of things. And that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, no, that's good. Well, why don't we jump in? So we'll dig into these. We have six reasons why your website still feels outdated. Do you want to cover the first one, Thomas? You want me to knock it out?
Yeah, well, you can introduce it and then I'll chime in. Go for it.
Your homepage is trying to say too much. Yeah. What do we mean by that?
Yeah, so this one I think is something that is one of those timeless advice ones that I was getting at, that I think that we probably gave this same kind of counsel all these years ago, 18, yeah. 17 years ago when we started helping churches with websites. So there's this fundamental desire that we have as churches to like try and even everything out and get all of this information onto a homepage. And this is not just for websites. This is something that authors do trying to cram too much in. This is something that pastors do when they're preparing a sermon. We try and say too much with things. And it's also true on a church website, just trying to pack too much in on the homepage. Where I see it most obviously is usually in the navigation. Like, so just the main navigation a church has on there. You know, we've helped churches do literally hundreds of websites and coached them through and done production calls coming up with navigation flows and flow charts. And it's always a fight to try and really make sure we keep that number as small as possible of how many different tabs we have on that main navigation. For me, the perfect number is 6. Like, that's what you should always target.
Yeah.
I think 5 to 7 is acceptable. Anything over 7, you're in no man's land there. And the reason for that is because it, just like a sermon, if you say too much, the main crux of what you're trying to get across gets lost in the weeds of all the other things that you're saying. Same thing absolutely goes for a website homepage. If you're trying to say too much, if you have too much in your navigation, the main crux of what people are looking for and what you're trying to say gets lost in a sea of information. So that's something that I'm seeing still to this day. It's a conversation we have to have on just about every one of our calls that we have with our clients, where we're doing a discovery call and doing a flow chart for them. We're always trying to talk people down to have less content on their homepage as much as possible.
Yeah. And another thing I'll say to that, not just the navigation, we are in a day and age where it is acceptable to have a longer homepage, meaning one that someone can scroll down just like they scroll down and thumb down on social and everything else from their phones these days. So that's fine, but you can still overwhelm with information. You could still not section the info properly or prioritize what info should come first. And there's a lot to think through with that. There is. And that's why we help, of course, and do what we do with web design with churches. But yeah, it is easy, because it is kind of acceptable also to go a little longer on a homepage to have it be too deep. Yes. So there's this balance of, yes, someone will thumb down a bit, but they won't on a homepage just scroll down for miles and miles, or they won't go as far as they will like on social as well. So
I think the way to think of it is with this scrolling, I do like that. And you can actually go somewhat long, but don't try to answer every question about, like, say, the details of your children's ministry on the homepage. Like, you need a dedicated page for that content. The idea, the way I think about a homepage, is that you can have lots of sections or boxes that kind of highlight other pages, but think of them as like teasers to try and get someone to click one step deeper into the website. So rather than talking about all of the things and the curriculum that you use for children's ministry and how long the children's services are and what they'll be learning every week, actually tease like, we really love kids at this church, and we promise you, your kids are going to be loved and cared for. Click here to learn more. You know, that kind of a statement is going to be better than trying to give the whole farm away there at the beginning.
That's true. That's true. This next one, surprised we're even mentioning it, but it still is an issue, is that your website is not optimized for mobile devices.
Yeah, it's strange. So this is advice that we didn't give when we first started, because mobile devices didn't, well, they just barely existed.
They're flip phones.
I think I had a BlackBerry when I met you.
That's right. That's right.
That's what I was on. So,
and the company we both worked at provided BlackBerries for us.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, that's it.
Bad decision, I think. So, okay. So
they had their time.
Yeah, they did. So this is still a problem, though. Like, this is still something that I see like all the time on church websites, is that they're built, they're not fully optimized. And I think like, the saying we have around here is not just optimized for mobile, but like a mobile first approach. That's what really the standard is today. You have to know that people are seeing your website primarily on a mobile device. 3 out of 4 of them. That's what the statistics will tell us, is that 3 out of 4 times it's going to be happening on their phone, not on a computer. Now, so here's the rub, and we know this as web designers, that we design on computers, right? So I don't know any web designer worth their salt that is doing the design on their mobile device. And so when we design on a computer, the first thing we look at, usually, if we don't train ourselves the other way, is we look at how it looks on our computer, because that's where we're designing it.
Yeah.
And so the fundamental shift that we've had to talk about here, our lead designer Jay and I have worked together and talked through this, yeah, is that we need to design on our computers, but the view that we design in first needs, yep, to be on the mobile view, because that's three, yep, quarters of people are going to see that first. So, yep, we really emphasize that. And I think that's usually where the most of the mistake comes from, is that, yeah, we're just kind of, the mobile side is almost like an afterthought. Like, we design it, yeah, to look good on a desktop, and then, oh yeah, how does it look on a mobile device? I know that because that's what we did several years ago. That's, yeah, how we did things here at ReachRite. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I think that I still see this mistake. It's something that we have to correct. It's 2026, yeah, something we need to move on from.
Yeah, and most themes out there, they're going to be already mobile responsive, but that, mm-hmm, doesn't mean that you're designing still with like a mobile first approach. So even, right, though you get a website and you know that, okay, yeah, it's mobile responsive, or you know it's going to be mobile friendly, mm-hmm, that still doesn't mean that like it was totally designed with the person viewing from mobile in mind.
Yes.
So you can't just check that box. You gotta go a little bit deeper, is what we're saying. Yeah. So, but good. This third one I like is this is a very, very common problem still. One of the most, I would say, in this day and age, even though a lot of church websites have improved from when we first started helping churches with them, Thomas, this one's a big one. You're not answering the right questions on your website.
Yeah, this is good. Okay, yeah. So this one stems primarily from not really understanding your audience, is the main mistake that I see churches making with this one here. So you're not answering the right questions because you're answering questions a lot of times for your members and not questions that visitors have when they, right, get onto your website for the first, yep, time. And this is like another one of those things that just happens for obvious reasons. Like when churches design websites, it's usually members of the church that are giving feedback on it and talking about the things that they would want on there. And so that's the voices that we hear from. And that's reasonable. Like, you wouldn't actually like try and recruit someone who's not a part of your church to give you website feedback in most cases. It might be an interesting study and probably valuable to do that. But I find that when we ask, like the squeaky wheel basically is the, yeah, people within your church, the members of your church, who often aren't as concerned with the questions that we're answering that a, right, new person might be more interested, because they already know the answers to them. They know, yeah, what time you meet and what people should wear to church and what you, right, offer for
the
kids.
Worship
and
style, yeah, all of that good stuff.
They know, yeah, all that stuff, right. And who doesn't know that is visitors to your church. And here's the thing. This is what so many churches miss, is that the website is primarily used by people that are not yet a part of your church. They're the main ones, yep, that are going on there. Members, yep, really only do a couple of things on your site. They, yep, will go, yep, to the giving page. They'll maybe go to the sermons page, and, sure, they may, yeah, go to, watch, the events page. But, yeah, your members, yeah, maybe one time will do it, but after that almost never will go to your about page, yeah, or learn more about your ministries on those pages.
Yeah, they're already in board. Yeah.
Right.
They're already on board,
to,
rather than in.
Right?
Yeah, in the fold. Yep.
Yeah. So
that's it exactly.
So I guess the best recommendation I have for you is to answer the right questions. What you need to do is really think through is, what is a visitor wondering when they first get onto our homepage, onto our inside pages? What are the questions that they have? And try and put yourself in their mind frame and build your site accordingly. That's kind of, yeah, the advice I have for you.
Yeah, that's it. And a lot of this is best placed, this content, on a plan your visit page, or you, mm-hmm, can call it an I'm new page or visit us or whatever. But it's an actual page that is the first call to action on your website for a visitor. So, yes, just in case people didn't know that, it's, you want to have a page dedicated to visitors. So, and we can spend
a
whole
further in this.
I was going to say, here. Yeah, yes, we'll, yeah, hold that thought. So, but anyway, next one is, you're still using stock photos or also staged photos. Mm-hmm. So another no-no.
Yeah. Okay. So it's 2026. Stock photos have no place on a church website today. I'm fine, no, to say that at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, sometimes as designers, we have to use them as placeholders,
yeah,
just because, You know, you want to have people get a feel for what kind of image can go
there. Kind of photos, yeah, yeah.
But my goodness, like, you just, it's not helpful. And I think especially, like, Gen Z, they're able to see through that so quickly. Like, and, like, there's been this aesthetic change that's happened, like, where millennials... I think that they're aware of it now, but there was a season where when we were targeting millennials and they were the young family generation, like, you could use really good stock photo that wasn't kind of canned or staged. You could use those kinds of things and it would feel like something that would be inviting and almost like borderline authentic. But Gen Z sees through that in a snap now. And in fact, the whole aesthetic has moved to almost like this rough, almost blurry iPhone kind of style photography that is more appropriate in design these days.
Yeah.
So that's something we're leaning more towards. And you just cannot use stock photography anymore. I would argue that it's deceitful in most cases to show people that are not a part of your church as if they are part of your church. You also shouldn't be using... I have mixed feelings on this, but you shouldn't be using AI photography also unless you're clearly designating that it's AI photography.
Sure.
And one of our rules is you should never use AI photography of your members that is changing them. Like, so, you know, if you have a picture of three people together and you want to use AI to, or that aren't together, you put AI to put them together or something like that. I would really frown upon that without permission for them. But this other thing we mentioned, using stage photography, I just think that the idea is you're much better off with candids. Like, so using the thing we always say here is photography of people caught in the act, living out the values of your church. That's what we're looking for throughout the site. So I would say the only staged photos that I would like on your site are just your staff photos where they're looking directly at the camera. And even those, you might not want to have them necessarily staged and looking right at the camera.
Yeah.
But those are the one exception. Everything else should be candids of real people from your church. That's my recommendation now.
That's funny. I'm chuckling and laughing inside when we were talking about how long we've worked with churches and their websites. Back in the day when websites were newer, there was a time where it was more acceptable to have stock photos. And we used to always joke, Thomas, if you remember, we worked with churches all over the country at that time. We'd say, wait, that family goes to that church in California. What are they doing in Pennsylvania? We saw them, that family actually on the wall in Target or Walmart. What's going on? They also go to that church. So,
do you remember the ones we had, like, there were several sites when we first started where it was like this perfectly diverse group of people all like holding hands and all like looking at the camera, like being staged. That was a design style.
Ages, races, and they looked like they had never seen each other before, and they didn't. We're all put in a photo staged by a photographer for stock reasons. So that's funny. So, well, next one's, this one I like too. There's no clear path for a first time guest. And this is what you meant kind of when I was starting to go into elaborating on the plan your visit page. But
Go into it. Why don't you talk about that a little more?
Well, that is the first one. So for a first time guest, so let's just be clear again, not a member, and maybe not even someone who's kind of recent. We'll talk a little bit about that. Someone who's visited maybe just a few times or a handful of times and not yet a member. But we're talking about a first-time visitor. Yes, when they get to the website, we still believe to this day and age that the main call to action for them, which is a marketing term, but it means what you're asking them to do, and you make it very visible right there, is a plan your visit page, or call it I'm new, call it something, just it needs to be clearly identified for the visitor. They click go to this page and it's totally designated for them. And what we see as far as being helpful on these pages are a welcome video from the pastor. Usually it doesn't have to be the pastor. It's someone definitely who's recognizable and visible at the church, but most of the time, senior pastor is the way to go. Brief video there and frequently asked questions, content for kids and youth. Obviously, most churches are focused on reaching younger families, and you want to make sure that not just on your kids and youth page that have another place on the website, but on this page that it's very clear that, hey, when you bring your kids, here's what's going to happen. They're going to love it. Here's what they're going to learn. Here's what's going to happen. So you really do want a page that funnels a first-time visitor. And then lastly on this page, after that kind of icebreaker content and informative content, is a place for them to respond, you know, a form for them to fill out. And what we've seen for several years now, Thomas, right, is not everyone fills out those forms, but the people that do are very sticky. Not only do they show up, they're usually return visitors. And we think it's because you formed this impression. They felt good enough to let you know they were coming. And when they showed up, they experienced what you presented on this page.
Yeah.
So,
Exactly. Yeah. So this like kind of plan your visit where they can fill this out. I have a testimony I'm going to share about this. Like, so just this week, we received three plan your visit forms for people that were going to be visiting this last weekend. That's high for us. Usually we get one or two. Three is like maybe one of our better weeks. Yeah. And I so I'm an executive pastor at my church. We're about 300 people. We're in Honolulu, Hawaii. Yeah. I personally write to each one of these people that fill out those plan your visit forms. I don't have, we could have someone else from our church do it. I just want to, we're kind of testing the waters and I really love doing it. So two of them respond, Cheryl and Esmeralda, that's their real names I'm sharing. And both of them wound up, so what I do, they fill it out. I send them an email. They respond and say, yeah, I'm looking to come. And my email is basically something to the effect of, hey, I saw this, really can't wait to meet you. I'll be looking out for you at the Next Steps table when you walk in. And yeah, let's make sure we connect. I connect with both of them. I got a chance to introduce them to other staff members. I made sure that members of our church went and sat and chatted with them because visitors always come early. That's another thing you learn when you're in ministry. It's if you're wondering who that person is sitting there by themselves 10 minutes before service, it's almost certainly a visitor. I get to connect with both of them. Both of them, I write to them after service, send them a text saying, hey, thanks so much for coming. They both had a really good experience and they both said how welcome they felt. They're both said that they're going to be back. And so, yeah, it's just an amazing thing. Actually, one of those two messaged us about getting involved with a life group immediately too and started talking with a life group leader. So this is what I'm seeing is that when people fill out these forms, their stickiness is really off the charts. I don't have any like actual hard data, but if I'm doing like a literal estimate, and I'm usually pretty tight on these, I would say over half of people that fill out those forms become regular attenders at our church.
Yeah.
Whereas like the actual average of people that visit our church and don't do that, and I think this is a good number, is about 20% of people that visit turn into regular attenders. Just for context, we've done some studies on this. That number is usually around 10%. It's kind of the national average. 10% of visitors turn into regular attenders to a church. Yeah. So we generally do well, but these people are far and away the stickiest people that we have at our church. So definitely leaning into this. It's a mistake to not have this on your website right now.
Yep, there you go. Yeah, that should be on there. Not much else to say about that. So hopefully that's helpful for a lot of churches. And let me say one more thing. I see churches kind of mixing this content up. Rather than having one landing page, they'll put some of it like on a Next Steps or some of it on an About page. And it's true. Hmm. Sometimes you'll have duplicate some content, but we really do believe having just that one call to action to a page that's designed for the visitor, having all of that important information for the visitor is we've seen it to get churches great results. So do it for sure. So last one here, and this has been, speaking of our experience, this has been an age-old problem that we've seen since websites were invented, and that is that your content rarely is getting updated on your website. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll talk about this in a couple of ways. So I don't suspect that churches should go in there and update their about page or their beliefs section, you know, once a week or something like that. Your beliefs shouldn't change that
often. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, but there are things that like you do need to be on top of. So you do need to make sure your sermons are, you know, you have people in place that do this as quickly as possible after the sermon has been delivered, that it gets up onto the website and that your events are well ahead and that your life groups and things are up to date and, your giving opportunities are all accurate, and that information, if you're, one thing we're doing at our church is putting a lot of our budget information and previous giving information onto our giving page and making sure that that's not from 2 years ago. So that's obviously important. I want to talk a little bit, I guess, about just updating sites in general. People ask us, like, you know, what is the lifespan of a church website? Like, how long can I let a website ride? And if you've designed it well, I think on average, like about 4 years or so is how much life you can get out of a website without needing to do like a complete overhaul. Do like a redesign. That's kind of what our recommendation is. I think when a site is 4 years old, you know, for us, the sites we were designing around COVID time, those are probably starting to show their age right now.
Yeah. And especially they had a little different strategy during that time.
We did. Yeah. So you probably have needed to make that change already. So here's a rule of thumb. If everybody in your photography is wearing masks, it's probably time to redesign your website, I think. So just kind of a quick piece of advice on that.
But
I think just having a plan for this, like a website was never made to last you for the entirety of your church. It doesn't have the lifespan of a logo or some of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
They do have a decent lifespan. You know, 4 years is a good amount, but do kind of plan for that. You probably ought to figure that out in your budget, that you probably need to do a church website refresh every few years.
Yeah.
It does make sense to do that. So some churches, I think you just talked to one not too long ago, Ian, that one of our long-term clients, that about 2.5 years, they did kind of a rebrand and wanted to redo their website just last week. And so, that kind of stuff happens. But if your website is 5, 6, 7 years old, you're probably past due already at that point, and it's time to look at a refresh.
Yeah, that I'm glad you identified that part. One other thing I'll say too, as far as just keeping your current website up to date, the two biggest things to keep up to date on a modern day website are your events and your on-demand sermons. Obviously it still makes sense to have an events page, a calendar of some sort, to let people know about upcoming events, there. And then also if you are recording your messages with audio or video, getting those uploaded once a week for people that missed it or just people that want to come in and get a feel. Those are the two things. And sure, you'll pop in the occasional like registration form and all of that. And of course, if you get a new ministry that you add to your church, that needs to be represented on the website too. But really the two biggest things. The neat thing is if you get a well-designed website and it's strategic for first-time visitors, the neat thing is really the only two things you got to keep up with are sermons and events usually. So it's back in the day, Thomas, when we keep joking, it used to be that churches put everything on their website. They not only had the sermons and events, they had prayer walls. They had all these other interactive elements. And a lot of it made sense for the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, trends and times have changed. So those are the main
two. Remember when we had that tool that would like help people like almost like buy and sell stuff from their church or like give things away to other people that I haven't thought about.
Well, yeah, it was a prayer and share wall. Like
a share wall.
You had one for prayer and then you had one to share like needs or even job opportunities. And it was almost like your church website was a Craigslist or, the marketplace on Facebook.
Right.
Yeah. So, not needed really anymore. So,
Times have changed, but some of these rules are constant, but some of them are new. Hopefully this has been helpful to you, and hopefully you took up my advice and you were doing an audit as we were talking here. How'd you do? Let us know down in the comments.
Yeah.
Of course, Ian, if people are looking for some help in this area, we're happy. We have tons of content that we've made that I think we must have covered just about everything you could need to know about how to build a website yourself.
Oh, yeah.
But if you want to have someone professionally do it for us, you, give us a shout. We'd be happy to help. See how we can talk about how we can help your church get your website into 2026 and beyond.
Yeah.
So thanks for being a part of the Reach Right family, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.